Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. As always, we are your drive time show, always having an exciting topic for you to, you know, that we always come up with an exciting topic to keep you company for the meantime that you are on your way, you know, contemplating what you're going to have for dinner and how the day was. Just breathe. It's super important. Something that, you know, something that is seen as that can easily be construed as as mundane, but it's needed in a lot of physical exercises. Boxers will tell you the same thing. Anyone who is involved in martial arts will tell you breathing.
No, that's 100%.
Breathe.
Yeah, even any athlete will tell you breathing unless
breathing. Control your breathing and you're good. Unless, screw up your breathing, you're screwed.
Unless your muscles decide something else and you and breathing are just breathing.
Your muscles are going to knock you out.
No, that's all they will do. Yeah. It's the one of the quickest ways that I've realized, you know, you with your human body, you can go like, yeah, just breathe as much as possible. Try to calm your heart rate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is if you remember to breathe, depending on the amount of physical exertion that you're busy inputting into a particular activity.
Yeah.
If you've not been doing this, you know, if it's your first time trying to do both aspects of exercising, then in some cases you will go through some, no pain, no gain, you know, considerations. You'll be hitting continuous walls. I mean, one of the best examples is always, I don't know if you've ever watched the Japanese anime, One Punch Man.
Mm-mm.
Where he trained, he literally became a human superhuman by just doing 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, 100 jumping jacks. No, not jumping jacks. What's the one? What's it? Squats. 100 squats.
Like, yeah.
And running a 10 kilometer, 100 push-ups, 100 squats, 100. There was something else.
10 kilometers.
And running 10 kilometers every day.
Yeah.
Where he literally pushed. Now, obviously, it's an animation. I know it's from a comic book. It's complete, you know, work of fiction and all that. It's the best.
Because the first question would be, did he have a job?
No, he was unemployed.
Definitely. That's the only way that can work.
He was unemployed. And in all that now of his body breaking through the superhuman barrier to becoming superhuman.
Yeah.
He lost his hair. He became completely. Oh, yeah. It's one of the jokes. It's one of the biggest jokes of the comic book, obviously.
In other words, if you want to keep your head, be lazy.
Exactly. Oh, don't put your body through any strenuous, you know, activities. But yeah.
This is too much for my ego.
It's like Cat Williams that discovered what steroids do to a man. He was like, why is this some satanic stuff working against me? Because he's a short guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he wanted to find a way of also, you know, boosting his ego by having muscles. And
that's a bad idea.
And when he realized that steroids technically have a reverse impact on his, you know, his...
You know, on the crown jewels.
Yeah, on the crown jewel situation. He was like, what kind of satanic stuff is... Everything is working against it.
Don't try that.
Yeah, guys.
Don't.
If you're short, you know, just leave the steroids somewhere else.
Because it's also, I don't see me, you know, I don't see me being buffy because you have to understand that steroids are not giving you extra muscles. They're just inflating the muscles that are already there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have those muscles, all the steroids will be like, what the heck I was supposed to inflate?
One of the best examples ever was what the explanation that I once got from an expose into boys sports, boys school rugby in South Africa.
Yeah.
Where the dietitian or the whatever, the sports scientist that was interviewed in the 2000s, in this particular scenario, explained that what one of the steroid products, it's known as creatine.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, and you would have heard of it.
Yeah.
So what this thing does, it traps water cells in your muscles, between your muscle fibers. So instead of you actually adding more protein content, because your muscle, a human muscle, is made out of protein.
Yeah.
So hence the reason why, if you've ever seen someone that's malnourished, or underfed or undernourished, It's they very skinny. It's literally like skin and bone scenarios.
Yeah.
It's because the body was cannibalizing itself to keep functions running. So if people don't know what your body does under severe strain, like being underfed, your body cannibalizes itself.
So when you are deprived for an extended period of time from any type of food,
yeah,
your body turns on itself. Your body keeps you running.
Yeah, your body burns muscle fiber. Your body literally burns muscle fiber to keep you alive, to keep your processes running, to keep everything running. Hence the reason, if anyone has ever seen, you know, like war scenarios of citizens or, you know, civilians who are malnourished, undernourished.
Yeah.
Those scenarios.
There's not a single muscle inside. It's just skin and bone.
It's just skin and
literally,
bone.
Yeah.
So, and obviously the opposite of that is, you know, a severely overweight person.
Yeah.
The complete opposite of that. Yeah. Someone suffering from obesity. So, in that particular scenario, the dietitian in South Africa at that scenario when they were investigating why is there something weird about school sports in South Africa, specifically schoolboy rugby, scenario was, you know, why are they producing, they're producing top talents, but what is their dark side to this? And one of it was the steroid stuff that were being sold to teenage boys who wanted to be bigger, stronger, and they wanted to score, by the time they reach matric or grade 12, they want to score a contract or get into the academy program of one of South Africa's provincial unions.
Yeah.
The provincial unions are fast track for you to reach a professional contract. And then from there, you have the opportunity of either playing overseas or scoring, depending on your talent, or getting into the Springbok side, which is in South Africa. And she explained the dangers of the steroid products in South Africa, which is obviously something that is used and bought by the guys that go to the gym a lot,
mm-hmm.
the gym fanatics. And she explained, or he or she, because I can't remember if it was a man or a woman, they explained, that dietitian expert. Well, they explained that what the steroid product does is it traps water molecules. It doesn't, it's not a protein. It's not a protein molecule added to another protein.
Wait, is that trapping a good or a bad idea for the body?
It's bad.
Audi.
Firstly, it expands your skin. Secondly, expands the muscle. Thirdly, your muscle is not organically constructed or beefed up, let me say.
So in a long run.
In a long run, many cases, many of the weightlifters have a lot of issues in terms of being flexible, being able to walk properly, function properly, even just, you know, to overall health safety, because it's water molecules in your muscles. It's not a muscle fiber that added more muscle fiber to it.
Look, all I'm saying is the sacrifice, at least for me, is not worth it, because I don't see the point of being ripped and then being terrible in bed. I'm just saying it's too much of a trade for me. So
you're even jumping the gun, because ripped is a good state of physique,
like the natural type, or more like ripped, generally good.
Ripped is like, I don't know. Do you remember Brad Pitt in Fight Club? Have you ever watched Fight Club?
I don't think the movie
with Edward Norton,
mm-mm.
which is obviously one of the, you know, considered one of the best sort of like indie movies or sort of like small budget movies that you can find. Because the only big budget was the salaries to the two of them, the two actors, because they were almost two leading actors in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So the downside of Fight Club was every person that ever watched Fight Club wanted to have the body that the two actors had. That is ripped. Ripped meaning there's no shred of fat on you. You're pure muscle, but you have got, you have a lean build. The opposite of that is the bulking. You're worried about the bulking. The bulking is the one where you look like
Like you have all the muscles upstairs and then your legs look like chopsticks.
That one, yes. Exactly.
That explains why I'm skating.
Yeah, so we've got to get back on topic here.
Away from, back from chopsticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ripped muscles, yes.
No, dear.
Or bulked muscles. But yeah, dear listeners, welcome you guys to the Home Run. as Helmut started off, obviously, this is your drive time session with myself and Helmut. Obviously, on the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And we're taking actually a completely different route from the muscle and steroid discussion we started off on. Well, technically, it has to do with a little bit of beefing up, Helmut, this discussion.
Yeah. And this is today we're talking about the dilemma that pretty much every country, and I think this is one of those problems that both developed and developing countries are having, with regards to how do you tax, the discussion of tax, especially as it relates to high net worth individuals. Mm. There's one gentleman in the, in the United Nations, in the United Nations discussion, the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, who kept saying, high net worth individual. I was like, huh? But maybe, it can also be described as that, but I more often look at it as a high net worth individuals that you want to tax. Now, I'm saying this is an issue in terms of, ironing out some of the problems in the discussion of the taxation of high net worth individuals. Mm. This is something that you find in both developed and developing countries. Mm. Because the dilemma here is that, UN negotiation, there's this gentleman from India, I believe, who pointed out that the trick here is to have this taxation discussion and not make it look like you are punishing people for being successful.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's dilemma number one. The first one was pointed out by the lady, I believe, from Brazil, who pointed out that the lady from Brazil or the gentleman. Who was representing the African Union, who pointed out that the trick is how to any types of high net worth individual taxation legislations that you're going to come up with. The trick is when you implement it, you don't want to come up with laws to tax high net worth individuals in your country if it's going to end up with what's that term that he used? I think it's a very common term in the world of economics. So that's a capital flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, my favorite part, it was pointed out by the lady, by the lady from Norway or also Brazil, one of the two, who pointed out was that, the problem, the gentleman also from the African Union also pointed out the exact same thing that, what is needed is a unified framework of, first of all, how to iron out the technical issues of, who are you taxing and how are you taxing them on? One of those discussions around how to tax high net worth individuals is based on the, on where they, a jurisdiction type.
Yeah.
Now, that sent me going, this is complicated.
Let's first start with the two particular points that you started off. High net worth individuals.
Yeah.
Now, high net worth individuals, Helmut, are currently the talk of the town in England, in the UK,
yeah.
In America,
yeah.
In much of Europe, I don't know if South Africa has started screaming, because in South Africa, you've got a weird thing in terms of that discussion we had yesterday about the kinds of, the kind of media you consume, is that I personally try to work through the lenses that the South African media apply in their reporting. What do I mean by this? For example, there's obviously South Africa has its own particular problem with corruption. I mean, the latest particular sort of like scandal was the, what's the organization's name? It's not our social security. But it's a sort of like a social welfare particular agency that exists in South Africa. It has the word foundation in it. And the particular CEO wanted to meet with this particular journalist from the
Daily. Hang on a second. Is it the one that went viral? I think I saw a video on that.
Yeah. He met with a Daily Maverick, journalist. And the discussion supposedly was all about, because the CEO wanted the journalist to drop the particular
The story that they were...
Yeah, the particular investigation said particular journalist and his or his, because it was a he, the journalist, his media house was doing, which is Daily Maverick. But the CEO did not know that the journalist was recording it, everything, with a small camera that he positioned in the tree because he got there like a few minutes earlier. So it was like literally some sort of James Bond, what's Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible, the character, yeah. Slash Ethan Hunt, yeah.
Slash Al Jazeera.
You have to throw in Al Jazeera there.
I know.
Yeah. Al Jazeera is a particular, they've got a particular palette for us Africans, Southern
Africans.
You
had to bring it home.
Yeah. So this discussion then goes viral because the CEO wanted to bribe the journalist by giving him a direct cash payment to drop any particular
investigation
scenario. The downside was, in South African, you can read it in the English. You can read it in the syntax and how the sentence was structured in the reporting.
Yeah.
Here in Namibia, we try to do, you know, like if you read the sentence, there's like a neutrality to the thing.
Yeah.
In South Africa, they write in a sense of like, Helmut is the worst person in the world tone. That's the voice. That's the voice tone you're getting out of South Africa.
It's more criticism than reporting.
It's not even criticism, Helmut. It's like you're being crucified. I'm not taking you back.
So it's a smear campaign, 101?
It's not a smear campaign even, because they obviously present their facts.
Yeah.
But how it's
So the facts are they, so yeah. It's not a smear campaign.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's literally like you are in the abattoir. You the subject matter.
Yeah.
You being abattoired even. Not yesterday when you said sanquasalized.
Oh.
Literally, you are being abattoired here. So in South Africa, it's difficult if you're a outsider trying to assess, you know, how the South Africans present like everyday information and discussions and data and, you know, how they talk about things. For example, I read a lot also about their corporate and economic news that comes out of their country.
Yeah.
And they would say, yeah, 129-year-old South African company is taking a major knock, is closing its doors. And it sounds so sensational. When you read it, it's because the country has been running large debts. The company that's closing its store has been running large debts. Who am I talking about? Marian Green. Marian Roberts, the construction company in South Africa. Marian Roberts in South Africa is going to close down, Helmut. If you don't know who Marian Roberts are, they used to operate also here in Namibia. A construction firm and all that. And they are owned by a consortium that sees one of their former board of directors having a stake in that consortium to buy, you know, that is accredited to the company itself. So if people come and ask, so does that not look like corruption? No, it's the private sector. The wheelers and dealers of the economy know each other. They go out and they know each other, who is doing what and who's where.
Yeah.
So the downside of such particular things in a South African context is the language being applied. Now, obviously bringing you to this discussion of high net worth individuals and, you know, what the conversation is in South Africa. In South, you don't know if the South Africans are actually talking about the fear of high net worth individuals. Even though I saw a report that high net worth individuals in South, who are South African, who moved 20 years ago to the UK, because they didn't want to deal with, you know, the policies that the ANC government was promoting or implementing in South Africa.
Yeah.
Now wish to return to South Africa because they don't like the Labour government in the UK or the policies that the Labour government wished to bring.
Okay, so this like, why did they leave? The same, after 1994, ANC takes over and they're overhauling the whole tax system and basically the legal system and the way that things are done in the country.
Well.
And they didn't like any of that, so they decided to move to Europe.
You have to look at the transition period specifically between the presidents that South Africa had. So from Mandela, everyone has got this, in South Africa. I personally don't.
The whole fantasy land type of.
Yeah, they've got this like godlike
figure,
you know, vision of Nelson Mandela.
Poverty gone, wealth here I come type of mentality.
And then Thabo Mbeki takes over. Yeah. Now, Thabo Mbeki was pro-economy as a president. He's pro-economy because his brother was an economist.
Yeah.
What's his brother's name? I've got the guy's book.
Doesn't have an advanced degree.
No, it's, they interview his brother a lot. His surname is Mbeki, obviously. But he also sort of like advised in his brother's government a lot.
Yeah.
Moleti Mbeki, yeah, that's his brother's name, the economist. So Moleti Mbeki.
What did Mbeki study?
Who? Thabo?
Yeah, Thabo Mbeki.
I don't know. Thabo, I think he has an advanced political degree or something like that.
Yeah, I know he has an advanced degree, but I'm not sure in which field. Yeah.
Yeah. So, in Thabo's, Thabo Mbeki himself is very quick to talk about socioeconomic aspects and socioeconomic development aspects.
Yeah.
Because he can point those things out to you. So the transition obviously moves from Thabo Mbeki to Jacob Zuma. Thabo Mbeki to
Halima Motlanthe.
Yeah, Halima Motlanthe. And then from Halima Motlanthe, it then transitions to Jacob Zuma. Now, it's in that period that meant that South Africa saw a supposed brain drain of high net worth individuals. It's all good. People move, Helmut. If people know that they have the ability to move, even in Namibia, we have people that move every day. North and south, meaning from Namibia heading northwards over the border, and vice versa, and even southwards, Namibians going southwards into South Africa, and even eastwards, and even out of Osiyakutako. You've got Namibians that relocate every day to a different place.
Yeah.
Here is the crux of the matter. The question that many of those guys were talking about, high net worth individuals, in the American context, which is currently the biggest conversation here today, is the city of New York voted in that, what's that guy's name? Mamdani. Who is being, obviously American politics goes to the wire in terms of
Smith's campaign. The one who was criticized for
being a Ugandan.
And also for eating his own food with his own hands.
Which is so stupid.
It's the dumbest thing you can think.
American politics.
Politics is the most useless thing.
Sometimes I sit there, I go like, you know what, then I think Namibian politics is probably so advanced that you can give all the political party leaders here in Namibia literally an advanced degree for just being advanced on the arguments that they put forward, the core concerns that they wish to, campaign on. When you get to the US, it's like dumb things. Either your mother was, because your mom was married somewhere, or your mother...
Now it's your fault.
Yeah. Or like what happened with the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, because he was caught on high school with cannabis.
How many years ago? This thing should have statute of limitations. I mean, they gave us this crap.
It was literally like 23 years by the time. And then they wanted him to resign. For something he did as a 16-year-old, Helmut.
Again, which is why I'm saying we use Roman Dutch law because we have English common law is part of our legal system.
Yeah.
And they gave us this thing, and embedded in there is statute of limitation.
Yeah.
Unless you killed someone, you can't tell me someone you stole 7 sweets 10 years ago. Therefore, for that,
and no one knew.
It's time for the ShopRite Home and Appliances promotion. Upgrade your home and live in style. Wide range of products, like an Essentials 1.7-liter auto kettle for only $149.99 each. And a 24-liter Essentials mini oven for only $899.99 each. Don't miss out on these special deals and more. Offers valid until 7 September 2025. Only at ShopRite, the home of lower prices you can trust. Always.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. So, just a minute past the hour of five. This is Homerun with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and this is your Drive Time Show. And today is it's a Wednesday. Yesterday was Heroes Day, and we're still celebrating our heroes.
Yeah, today is a Wednesday. Yeah, don't worry, guys.
Today is a Wednesday. Don't worry. Tomorrow is Thursday.
Yeah.
Don't worry. Friday is payday. Now, where are we? High school.
Yeah, the high school scenario. So, when you look at this particular discussions of the high net worth individuals,
taxation discussion,
and you cite and you look at the policies that are currently floating around in the world, across the world, obviously there's certain countries that have their things in order and other countries that don't.
Yeah.
For example, I'm bringing you back to the TCAT discussion on Monday, whereby the four pillars that Japan housed on, in terms of what the AU has to adopt, is get your economy in order. So getting your economy in order obviously means that this plays directly in line with this global taxation framework that the UN member states have been meet. They actually met 2 weeks back, because it was a 2-week engagement. Dear listeners, if you don't know, they actually began on the 2nd of August or something, and then they ended somewhere on the 15th or something. There was a first session that first week and a second session the second week. Helmut obviously looked at, you know, where much of the stuff began on. I read much of the literature, just to be honest, because I went directly to Guterres' 2023 report that he submitted for this whole discussion. They were waiting on a report. Remember, it's the same thing like with the global south-to-south cooperative, development cooperative scenario. Mm-hmm. Who is best to help the global south in achieving the SDGs? And it was identified the BRICS countries in Guterres' report. The BRICS countries are in the best position to help. So, the same scenario then also dictates where does all this conversation come from. So, where does all this conversation come from, dear listeners? The US currently is seeing a rise in certain particular politicians that are talking about not social reform, but more like taxation reform in various states. For example, trying to ensure that, for example, like what Mamdani said, because I watched one of his interviews, to ensure maintenance of quality of life. And then primarily using the examples of what happened in Norway, what has happened in the Netherlands, what has happened in countries like Germany. Then the discussion also pops up now with the recent discussions, obviously, of the former Labour minister, the former Labour Leave Party leader in the UK, Jeremy Corbyn, who established a new party himself. And then obviously what his particular party's particular policy direction would be, is it based upon, you know, for the social good of all British or UK citizens, stuff like that. And then obviously you can cascade into the various aspects around the world. The president that Colombia voted in, the guy from 2 years ago, 2023, he's most the first socialist or communist president, meaning it's in the party's name. That's why I'm using those two words.
Yeah.
It's either socialist or communist president that Colombia has ever had, you know, in terms of its peacetime era after the civil war that it had and the huge internal strife with the drug cartels from its own country.
It's a very South American thing.
You know who was based in Colombia?
Oh yeah, I know.
The guy that literally was he even bought his way into the parliament.
Yeah.
And everyone knew he bought his way into the parliament because everyone watched that Netflix series of him. If you don't know who I'm talking about, guys, that is Pablo Escobar.
He didn't buy his way in there. Well, technically he...
He did, Helmut. He did. You know he did. And then he wanted to become president.
Yeah.
You know he did.
Look, he had so much money, he had his own army.
So much money, he literally could run the country with his money.
That's why a lot of Colombians to this day look at him as a hero, even though he made a lot of people disappear. And, he was running the country with an iron fist, you know. He basically ran, you know, Machiavelli's The Prince of a leader should choose whether they should be loved or feared. And since they can't be both, it's mostly advised to...
No, he put himself literally in the middle.
He decided to go in there like, you know what, when given circumstances arise, I will go towards fear.
Yeah, he literally put himself in the middle, because the ones that loved him, I think, were, you know, most of his particular immediate community members and family.
Yeah.
But if you look at the politics playing out in the world specifically, and you look at it from an economic policy perspective, then you realize this, it's like an ebb and flow scenario. So getting back to the particular talking point, obviously, has been where, you know, what does this international framework, what do they wish to achieve with the high net worth or high net value individuals? Now, the downside is, Helmut, Norway has created a lot of high net worth individuals itself with its high taxation rate. Not just Mamdani, but Mamdani cited an American, more localized example in the US. High net worth or high value individuals. So we're talking about billionaires, millionaires, rich people, legacy rich people, people with generational wealth and all that. They tend to stay in an economy, even with a high tax rate, if the quality of life is maintained at a rate that is adequate for them to enjoy. Do you know what was one of the weirdest documentaries I ever watched, Helmut? And I didn't finish watching it.
What was that?
It's a Deutsche Welle documentary on YouTube based upon the German nobility. Many people would go to Germany and think that Germany does not have nobility. Those guys still have their titles. Those guys are still nobility.
The royal titles.
No, nobility and royalty is some two different things.
As in, they said the same, like the top 1% bunch of guys.
Yeah, but nobility is you have a title. If you're a royal, it's through lineage.
Yeah.
So a nobility is a nobleman.
Yeah.
So the Germans, Germany still has its nobility, them and the Austrians. Those guys, Helmut, you would not know that this is a person sitting with so much generational wealth right next to you, probably on a train, or probably in a university class, or probably in the same high school, if you did not know the history behind the person's
If you don't know who they are.
If you don't know who they are.
You are not going to suspect it.
This person could be walking in everyday life, you know, going to the same shops, same malls, like the same things that you like.
Yeah.
Probably go to a football match just like you. Until that
without a convoy, they are just driving. Like this one guy, I think one of the millionaires. I think that was Sweden or Denmark.
Yeah,
who drives one of those? One of those. I think it's one of those. Is it call it the seven? So those old seven seater shaped. Volkswagens.
Yeah,
and that's the one that he for the most part drives around in.
Yeah,
and now the thing is,
the Dutch king goes and watches football matches himself.
Without a convoy.
No convoy, no security. Okay, he shows up there when the Netherlands plays against someone else. You know, the national team.
You know, I'm emphasizing a convoy.
Why?
Because Africans love those.
Yeah. And now everyone needs to know.
One's knees convoy.
Here comes the blue, what do they call it in South Africa? The blue light patrol. The blue light convoys. That's what they call it in South Africa. The blue light and I was like, no, the blue light motorcades, yeah. They call it the blue light motorcades in South Africa. Look, the high net value discussion is not about politicians. People need to understand this today, guys. What we're talking about is we're talking about the billionaires in your society, the millionaires in your society. The fear supposedly out there, and this pegs back to trickle-down economics.
Oh.
The thing that has been proven not to work in the developed economies or the advanced economies.
But we're still clinging to it.
But like in a Southern African and an African Union context, we wish to see trickle-down economics somehow materialize in our context. So at the heart of this particular scenario, when I read, the first half of this report, is that, and like you now cited the high net value peoples from the live streams or the televised meeting, the various sessions that they had. High net value people, Helmut, have a very weird tendency. A high net value person doesn't want to come to a country like Namibia specifically, and then they see right across the street, there is a shack standing over there. They don't want to see those things. What they would love to see is that if every Namibian has a built house.
Okay, I have an example for you on that one.
Yeah.
If you went to a grocery store and ran into a bunch of Tura boys with their kapis at the entrance, you're not coming back to that shop, are you?
Of course.
Exactly.
Because you will tell that shop owner.
How safe am I?
I cannot even go in and shop because between me and the car in my parking lot, my car in the parking lot, yeah. I'm going to get robbed.
Yeah. It's either of my money or of whatever it is that I'm buying in there.
Yeah. And then what will the shop do? The shop will then relocate to a safer place.
Yeah.
That is perceived as a safer zone.
Yeah.
So that you can shop there. Because the shop then knows, the damage to its reputation and image is going to be far worse if it continues staying there and operating there.
Yeah.
Because then that distribution point doesn't make money. Hence the reason why I told you what a high net value person wants to see is they want to see every Namibian where they drive. They want to see everywhere. Even if they drive now to, what's that other side of Ochimise? Ochimise 20 or Ochimise 30.
That's Dwight.
Don't worry, guys. It's a funny joke.
Yeah,
don't worry.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know, you have that side of the police station.
Yeah. But the furthest part. Yeah. Or even there, the furthest part, that expansion that has taken place of Havana and Akana.
Yeah.
Those, and, what's the other one's name? Oganja Park.
Yeah.
The other informal.
Yeah. Kavango Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm never going to Oganja Park again, am I?
Ah, that's Helmut, remember, guys? So, if that high net value person wants to see built structures over there, all they want to know is that there are people that have access to the basic needs. They've got shelter, they have connection to water and electricity, and they can fend for themselves. Even if they do a minimum wage job, they can fend for themselves. That's what a high net value person wants to see. Then a high net value person, Helmut, wants to see that you've got a functioning transport system that you and I have been literally blowing our tops off here on the home run for 2 years now.
Yeah.
They want to see that. A high net value person wants to see that you've got universal access to healthcare. They don't want to hear of a divided system of private healthcare and such healthcare and that. They don't want to see that stuff. They just want to know that, is there a health facility? Can I gain access? Will I be assisted if I have an emergency? They also don't want to hear things of, we only see 10 people a day, sir. And the 10 people, the people that get priority in that 10 people allocation is young children, women, and the elderly. Now you are sitting there as an able-bodied man who has to go to work, who's half of his face is on fire with pain and inflammation. What are you going to tell your boss, struggling with pain, being dosed up on painkillers?
And you went through hell on that?
No, but it's a stupid rule to have. Helmut, is a stupid rule to have. It doesn't make economic sense. Sending a sick person back and telling them, we only see 10 people,
mm-hmm.
and the people we prioritize before we get to you, you literally count 15 of them before you.
For you guys, Spiritu Santo until tomorrow.
May the Lord be with you, Mabra. Hope that you come back tomorrow. We want to see the positivity.
Oh dear. Commercial break.
YouSave prices on groceries are still the best in town. 4 kilos of real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just 189.99 Namibian dollars. 84 grams of Robertson's chicken spice, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup of all variants, just 5.99 Namibian dollars each. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Wright brand sunflower oil, just 68.99 Namibian dollars. And 2 kilogram bag of Pasta King elbow pasta, just 44.99 Namibian dollars. Save big at YouSave.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually...
USAFE prices on groceries are still the best in town. 4 kilos of real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just 189.99 Namibian dollars. 84 grams of Robertson's chicken spice, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup of all variants, just 5.99 Namibian dollars each. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Right Brand sunflower oil, just 68.99 Namibian dollars. And 2 kilogram bag of Pasta King elbow pasta, just 44.99 Namibian dollars. Save big at USAFE.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintuk Original, or Vintuk Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new...
Welcome back to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we are here keeping you company for the meantime that you are, whether you are driving or cooking, thank you for choosing us this wonderful afternoon, and we continue.
Or just relaxing and sitting.
Yeah,
I hope you guys are relaxing and sitting.
Yeah.
Down, you know.
Listening to my very soothing voice. Okay, now... My voice, I know my voice is anything but soothing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, one thing that, speaking while on the sort of like, the atmosphere that must be set, the point that you made with regards to what, for example, in terms of, in terms of investment that high net worth individuals, aka, that's a fancy, very long, politically correct way of saying rich people.
Yeah.
What they are looking for is, what you laid out that, what they are looking for, took me back to February, the future of energy security that was held that was held in London, and one thing that that is the International Energy Agency kept pointing out was that the energy infrastructure that's needed to give for us to accomplish the energy goals globally that we'd like to achieve is requires a lot of investment, because you are talking about infrastructure that takes decades, that will just take forever. It takes a very long time to finance and set up. But the return on investment is the one that takes decades to basically get it back. Now, when you look at it from that, it goes to show you again. It goes to point to what is needed. So you see, you begin to see that both the high net worth individuals and the individuals running the country. We're talking about central government. Everyone at the, especially at the top level of the government. Basically the three branches.
Mm.
Now it's up to them to create that friendly environment for the high net worth individuals to basically risk their money into whatever investment that they want to put their investment into. Now things like, for the millionth time, Mozambique is an excellent example of what not to do if you want to attract investors. Because again, attracting investors, as the African Union representative gentleman in that discussion pointed out, was that one of the biggest problems that's standing in between the implementation of different countries with regards to taxing the rich, or as it's been known to go, all over social media these days, he's talking about that from the look of things, he's talking about that from the United Nations member states. That's why he's looking at it, that there is no unified information sharing system and the information sharing legislations over how to tax the rich. Because you have Namibia here that's having a different corporate tax, from South Africa and Botswana. Now, as someone that is having, as someone that wants to set, to take their money and to save their money somewhere or invest their money somewhere, what they are looking for is obviously cut as much expenses as possible. It's just the business. Yeah. Now, when you look at it, that if you have take for example the Bermudas or the Bahamas, which last time I checked have what, like 0% corporate tax, now this is where I feel like it's very it's very important for each and every single one of us to just try to the best of our ability to be honest with ourselves. Now, if you had the money that that Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk has, for example, and now you are faced with two, now you have to choose between two countries, which one you are going to invest in. You have the Bahamas, and both these countries have the same opportunity of whatever it is that you want to invest in. They have the same energy supply that you need. They have the same consumer base that you need. So all you just have to do is pick one. Because you just want to invest in one. Mm-hmm. Now you have one country that is having corporate tax of 32% or 27%, mm-hmm. and you have one that has 0% corporate tax. Which one are you investing in?
Hamid, there's an even more powerful thing.
Yep,
trusts.
Mozambique.
You don't need tax havens. You don't even need Namibia to. The downside, obviously, with what happened with the FATF, the Financial Action Task Force, the guys that grey-listed us.
Mm-hmm.
Grey-listing is technically like you are in purgatory for now.
Yeah.
You can correct your ways.
Yeah.
South Africa was most fully grey-listed because South Africa was struggling to get its act in order. Namibia partially got our way somewhere. And remember, you and I, we did that discussion last year. You know, what is the impact of this grey listing,
mm-hmm.
and what does it look like? Obviously, with our former colleague at that stage, Justicia, she went through the entirety and even spoke to the guy that represented Namibia in terms of submitting this report. I think it was an ambassador or something at the UN level or in Geneva, also at another UN level. Because that's where because the FATF is a multi-global agency
mm-hmm.
Task force. Now, the trust, Helmut, exists, like you just said, in our legal system in Namibia. We just saw a very good exercise of the trust system in the ongoing NAMCOR bail hearing discussions.
Yeah.
And much of the details that actually came out was that, some of the accused, I use that word, I'm most correct saying that they are being accused. Some of them use a trust mechanism in terms of what assets they own.
Oh, that was also covered in that discussion.
Yeah.
Ownership.
So, in a trust discussion, trusts are not illegal, dear listeners. Just remember that a trust is not illegal. Your mother and your father, If there are many guys of you, the siblings, your mother and your father can set up a trust whereby none of you can have control of the thing, but the thing controls all assets. And the idea of it is literally, technically, generational wealth or maintaining some sort of generational protection in terms of assets and other particular monies. Now, the reason as to why this UN International Taxation Framework discussion or meeting was taking place is obviously they're trying to combat illicit financial flows, tax evasion, which is where the Bahamas and the Bermudas comes in, which which technically answers your question slightly, that the idea is that they're trying to influence certain negative behaviors. Or, let me just read this other part. It's aggressive tax avoidance, tax evasion, money laundering, and illicit financial flows, and also to improve and build confidence in tax systems. What has been proven through a documentary is that the UK is the world's largest
tax avoiding
entity. Just from one little area in London, which we know is a city, but it's known as London City in the City of London. It's where the Bank of England sits.
Yeah.
The Bank of England is literally in a different jurisdiction in the UK.
In London.
In London. Why? The myth, the theory is literally when William the Conqueror showed up, that part of London City or the City of London literally survived the siege. It was never conquered, apparently.
That's how many years ago?
A good thousand years ago.
We are not going to use that as a reason why we are making decisions today.
No, they are using that as to why they are making such decisions.
Look, the technicalities again, and I really loved every bit of that discussion. And the discussion I keep referring to here is the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee on the United Nations Framework Convention on International Tax Corporations.
Yeah.
My God, that's a mouthful.
And the whole idea is just to have inclusive tax system, which is represented across the world.
So, the dilemma here let's call it a dilemma because, as an individual, it doesn't matter, your social status, you are allowed to own property.
Yes.
And you are allowed to move this property any way, as you see fit.
Yeah.
As long as you're moving these properties legally.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing. If we have all the system that you have in Namibia and take, for example, you are changing your tax laws and you're increasing it. And as a high net worth individual, I decide, I want to move my money out of this, because it's not healthy for my financial well-being. It's my property. I can move it if I want to.
But
you are not going to make it illegal for me to move my property.
But what would make it illegal? What would make you move? Not the illegality or legality.
Yeah.
What would make you move your asset, Helmut?
One, political instability is one of those things.
100%.
Yeah.
Secondly,
Two, the conflict. Security.
Conflict, yeah, security.
The security because, if you look at Mozambique's tuna bond, the reason why, the fallout after the whole thing blew up back in 2016. One thing that you see is that, a lot of economists have reached the point of analysis that, Mozambique lost a lot from the capital flight of investors than they did from the $2.2 billion that they borrowed and then chopped it all up.
Yeah.
Because after that, like you pointed out last time we had this discussion, every investor was like, okay, you know what? If I sit here and continue investing in this economy, when all the money that was just, borrowed and stolen, when they start paying it back, they are going to have to increase the taxes.
Yeah.
And I will have to pay for that.
Yeah. And I don't want to pay for that.
Exactly. I don't want to pay for a fully grown man's irresponsibility.
Yeah.
I'll just pack my bags and leave. And a lot of them packed their bags and left.
Mm.
So, first of all, the legal security must be provided. The economic instability, that's another layer of security also must be provided.
Mm.
Which is why I think it's, the most selfish thing you can do is borrow money on public name and use it for private use. Because, you have to understand that there are people that are asleep when it comes to things that's going on in the financial world. Because, what do I have to lose? I already have minus 14 in my bank account in the first place. But every investor is watching each and every single transaction. And they want to know that if they're going to invest in that economy, how safe is their money? Because, I mean, if you, if you have your 10 bucks under your mattress, that's how safe you want your money to be.
Mm.
How do you think it feels, especially the nerves of having to safeguard $1 billion?
Mm.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's also a scenario, ultimately, Hamoud, why I mentioned the peace of mind a high net value person wants. You see, it doesn't make sense for the AU to come and talk about high net value people specifically. It doesn't make sense for the AU to come and talk about high net value people.
Oh, it does. Let me explain.
No, I also want to explain.
Please come.
Because if you get into some of our African countries.
Yeah.
Hamoud, a high net value person, for example, would love coming to Namibia. But you, if you're a tour guide, you will not take them to Ochomise or to Havana or to Hakaana.
Yeah.
Even if you're trying to give them a cultural experience.
No, that's where you take NGOs.
Yeah, that's where you take civil society and NGOs because you identify.
Sorry guys, had to throw you.
There are issues. Yeah. But then the issues are also born out of a scenario of where is the local authority at that level? Just an example, you know, question would be asked, you know, what would City of Windhoek be doing to try and address, let's say, the rapid expansion of the informal settlements?
Yeah.
But then, you know, that's the development issue, a developmental issue. What a high net value person would like to see for that matter is, would they be allowed to enjoy certain particular services in Namibia? Would they be allowed to drive through Namibia and, let's say, go and see Dune 7? Would they be allowed to drive all the way down to Sources Vlei? Would they be allowed to see, you know, the difference between communal farmers and producers and private and commercial farmers and producers? They would like to see these balances, you know, just what the way of life of Namibia looks like and ultimately experience way of life. Now, if you show them a 99% positive picture, they'll be convinced to stay in Namibia. But if you now take them to Cape Town and the person, you tell the guy, you literally cannot stop your car between the Cape Town airport, the city of Cape Town, because you've got Khayelitsha in between. And you have to tell them you can't ride train because you've got the not so good people of society that get on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon and 5 o'clock in the morning who do joyriding in between and technically run their criminal syndicates literally on a moving train while literally repossessing other people's assets, physical assets and shopping sometimes, and sometimes even their hard earned monies. Then what kind of high net value person wants to stay in such a place? Where you've got to, you said with the shop, you've got to defend yourself around every corner.
Yeah.
No one would stay in such a country.
No.
No one would. No one also doesn't want to stay in a place, for example, like what happened in Mali with the coup d'etat or the coup. Mm-hmm. When I looked at that.
No, Barry Gold was hanging on for dear life.
I was sitting there going like, Mali, how long have you been independent? Gravel road, brah. What are you? And then I went and read about the French community. I'm like, oh my God.
Yep. Now,
Baja, get to your example.
Now, the AU's presence there was somewhat interesting because.
It's always interesting seeing what the AU guys
say. It's interesting. And what's even more interesting is how that guy has a PhD in beating around the bush because when it comes to.
That's why I said, what was the AU doing there?
The point he was making is that one of the reasons why it's difficult, and he's representing the AU, and he did mention, I think, Kenya, Tanzania, and and Zambia in more like in the examples that he was going to make, but separate from that, the point, one point that he made with regards to why it's difficult for a lot of African countries, if not the whole African continent, when it comes to taxing a high net worth individuals, is because of how private entities that are of high net worth value, both natural and juristic individuals, are so intertwined with the politicals, with the political system.
Yes.
To the point where now...
I mean, Ramaphosa is a clear-cut example.
Exactly.
He's a millionaire, and he's the president of South Africa. His brother-in-law is one of South Africa's richest men, who's also the president of CAF. And then the ANC, you know what's the weirdest part? The ANC has got a couple of billionaires.
The whole Donald Trump administration
is the poorest of billionaires.
The poorest there is a millionaire. Now,
yeah, exactly.
Now, you just have a
bunch of all of them are Africans.
Look,
okay, Elon Musk is no longer there, but we was working from when he was there.
Now that's where I looked at the AU, you know, the AU representative guy, and went like, oh, homeboy here is just going spot on. Now that's something again that I think, that's something that earlier this month, I believe that during the Anatolia Diplomacy Forum, I think that took place in Turkey. Jeffrey Sachs pointed out that, alluded to some of the similar, some of the same thing that, look, one of the reasons why it's very difficult to run a lot of, initiatives that's coming out of the public sector is because, it's short of funds.
Yeah.
And, these funds, it's because, there are some tax systems that are not working adequately, at least not the way that they should.
Mm.
And most of this is coming out of the private sector, especially the private sector that has a lot, a large private significance of individuals occupying public office.
Yeah.
One example that he uses, of course, is using an American system on this one, that, a lot of people that you find in Congress, it's like saying there are a lot of people you find in Parliament. A lot of people that you find in Congress, get there by, through donations from private entities.
Mm.
So these are private entities that's, funding lawmakers to get into office so they can make more laws and help them avoid paying taxes. So in other words, go in there and run a system that needs tax dollars, but we don't want to be contributors to those tax dollars.
Mm.
And, to give you, now, just for your sake, if you're going to do that, we are going to give you a share in our company. So now that's where you have in most Western countries, they have this, the term they coined was this revolving door politics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you have someone occupying a high government office for 5 years, and then they are CEO of a private company for 5 years, and they come back again, and now you have all this. Now, who is this? Before the invasion of Iraq, back in 2003, I think Dick Cheney was running. Is it Lockheed Martin?
Yeah.
Yeah. For a couple of years. Then from there, he comes back to the White House, and then he's back Lockheed Martin. And then, the thing is, after he left Lockheed Martin and comes back to the White House during the invasion of Iraq, now guess who wins the tender to build the weapons that were used in the invasion? The same company that he was a CEO of. Mm. And everyone's like, just what the heck is going on here? Mm. Now,
it's like Anthony Blinken of Joe Biden's administration. He's got a research. He's got a policy research firm, consultancy firm. Guess whose policy research reports they use?
In the analysis
to understand what's Homeboy had two hats on, literally.
This collabo between the private sector and the public sector is one that is somewhat, making the implementation of any law with regards to, to taxing of high net worth individual somewhat very difficult to, very difficult to implement.
Yeah.
Again, then everything becomes very technical from this point because in a lot of countries, it's not illegal for a public, for a public office bearer to have shares in a private company.
Yeah.
And also, even if you made that illegal, there are a lot of loopholes that you can exploit. Now, one thing I know is that the head of the Namibian Central Bank, must earn his money strictly from what he's being paid.
Yeah.
Like the chances of him venturing into other, what you would call side hustle, are very legally limited by the legislations running the financial institution.
Mm.
Now, implementing something like that is a good thing.
Mm.
But again, there are loopholes.
That's why he had to sell us his company.
Yeah. So you have to understand, I think that's where, now that you know, that legal framework is a very good one, because anyone that's going to, to want to be in that office should know what they're getting in.
Plus, you don't want to be, the downside is, because Hamoud, if we look at certain industries, obviously, which has to do with the movement of money, which is banking, financial services, which is usually insurance, and then you've obviously got the other aspects, which are consultancy services and the like, associated to just the movement of money. Okay, consultancy services obviously would be something like auditing as well, in that scenario. All these guys look at one aspect, which is, how does the money come in? How does the money go out? That's it. A scenario like that obviously points towards how big is the ecosystem that you're looking at? Because if you've now got something like South Africa, which has a stock exchange known as the JSE, which literally the South African Stock Exchange itself does such a diligent, they do such severe due diligence, Hamoud, that if a company lists there, they want to know what is the educational background or the career background of each of your executives or your managers and stuff like that, you know? They want to know literally what does each person do? What was your skill set? What is your experience range? Yeah. How did you get here? How did you get this position? Who's the owner? What's your level of personal debt? Stuff like that. They want to see if you're someone that has some sort of sound character, something like that. And then there are indications in terms of trying to understand to what extent, this private sector entities actually play a particular role in the tax collection of the government. Because this UN report that Guterres wrote indicates, the first sentence there is literally, a country's taxation mechanism is reflective of its particular needs. So that means Namibia is a developmental country or developing country. Yeah. So Namibia's needs are developmental. So Namibia's taxation system or its tax system reflects that we need money to do our own stuff. Which brings you and me back to when you and I looked at the medium to long term expenditure framework. Sorry, it wasn't budgetary framework. Expenditure framework, the 1,000-page document, where we realized, wow, we are funding everything predominantly ourselves, except for a few externally funded capital projects, which was a good thing to see and a good thing to understand, which means Namibia wants to ensure self-sufficiency. What NAMRA collects is what Ministry of Finance can present to the other ministries. The other ministries put their budget plans down and their procurement plans down. And then based upon that, the financing will be allocated. And then every February, we, the rest of the country, we hear the finance minister stands up in parliament and then announces the national budget. That is literally what Guterres explains happens, or what does Namibia's tax system look like. Now you get to a scenario of, you've probably got too few private sector companies. How do you collect tax? Because if your government is the largest, like Namibia, which has the largest workforce, the single entity with the largest, single largest workforce,
yeah,
then what do you do then?
I think it's back to the word dilemma here. The dilemma is how to balance taxing. You know, you don't want to tax them so high that you chase them away. You just want to tax them enough that they remain.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. The time is 15 minutes to the hour of 6, but before we continue, let's take a live read.
Davichi University, where new short courses are available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Science, Program is Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements are Grade 12 Senior Certificate or an equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in the 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or a Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in the 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus a 2 years relevant industry experience that'll be required. The course cost is $5,500. Application period is from 1 August to 31 August 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462 or email admissions@wu.edu.na. Davichi University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. We have 14 minutes to the hour of 6. Now, the most, the dilemma here is, there are options. Take for example, if you are a rich guy in Namibia and you see the tax laws are going to the point where it's impacting you negatively, or you are just great as heck and you just want to hide your money somewhere.
Yeah.
You can always move your money to places where you think they don't have the high taxes that are available in Namibia. Now, this is the dilemma that, countries in the United Nations level are basically going through. Now, I think the biggest issue here is that this is the United Nations being an international organization that has all these 190 something countries that are coming together and then saying that, you know what, we're just here to give each other advice, not to dictate terms.
Yeah.
Now, that means, even though we are all members of the United Nations, you can make your own tax laws. I can make my own tax laws. You can have yours higher than mine. It's not a problem. Now, but if you want to address things like tax avoidance, for example, tax avoidance is something that a lot of multinational companies are exploiting these days because, well, it's not illegally, technically. Yeah. But now tax evasion, on the other hand, that's just flat out illegal. Now when you look at it from that angle, then you begin to understand that this is a dilemma of how do we work together without shoving legislational changes down each other's throat.
And something that is not negative to me or negative to you and positive to someone else. And, it has literally a widespread balance.
Yeah.
The term that they obviously use is inclusive. To make it as inclusive as possible, meaning that everyone's tax systems align with this global discussion.
So, and all this fits into the SDGs.
It all fits into the SDG because the SDG that it targets is SDG 16, specifically 16.4. Remember, it's there to try and curb illicit financial flow.
Yeah.
Money laundering.
Which right now is...
Actually, I don't know how severe it is if I ask you that question.
Uh-huh.
Or even if you tell me. Because I still want to know in terms of, okay, so there's illicit. And then there is, let's say, the good area of flow. Now, what does the good area of my financial flow look like? Because a company can even hide, let's say, the aspect of double taxation.
Mm-hmm.
A company operating in Namibia. They could say, no, because I'm registered in Mauritius, why must I pay corporate?
That's where the jurisdiction is.
Yeah, why must I pay corporate tax over here? I can only.
If I'm already paying that.
Sorry. Yeah. If I'm already paying and you both are SADC countries. And then what can Namibia do? Because Namibia doesn't know if Namibia would know, obviously. But Namibia doesn't know how do they approach Mauritius to say, hey, listen, let's sign a bilateral tax agreement treaty with each other. Because Kudera has noted here that many countries understand that bilateral treaties for the tax, the movement of money or goods between two countries is the basis of starting off everything.
Yeah, but now that is where I'm reaping the rewards because the whole tax countries that have low taxes tend to see an influx of a lot of high net worth individuals because they don't have to worry about all the taxes that they would worry about from a lot of their countries.
Or their assets would obviously fly in there.
Exactly. Would fly in there. So, for these countries, it's an economic advantage.
Yeah.
Now, telling them to increase their taxes so that they can chase away this, all this bunch of guys that are benefiting their economy positively, questionably sometimes, Mauritius is going to go like, so you want me to implement the laws that is chasing investors from your country so they can also run away from my, run away from my country. Mm. How is that an advantage to me? And you have to understand all these, AU member states and UN member states. So they're just telling each other, okay, why should I implement your laws? What's in it for me? Type of type of scenarios.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is on an individual country basis, and this I think is a universal problem.
Yeah.
The revolving door politics that we have here. Now, if you have a lot of you can. I think this is where the technicalities now come in, because if you can have, you can write a very, impeccable laws about making public officials, making it illegal for public officials to hold shares or more like to have any type of direct interest, direct or indirect interest in private entities. But, here's the thing. I cannot hold shares in private company. But it doesn't say anything about me giving my money to my brother to buy those shares.
Mm.
And then you see that if you have to now write
a piece of... Purchasing it through your unborn child.
Purchasing it through my five-year-old. That drove Namibians nuts.
I know, I would still go with unborn.
Unborn. Just why?
A child in the future.
I don't think that's going to work because... because
the person has to be alive.
The person has to be born.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, when biologically you are alive from fertilization, cells are alive, blah, blah, blah. The story goes way back.
Yeah.
But, legally you must be born and they have to, medically spank you when you start crying. Like, yep, give him a birth certificate. Now we can go now. Totally alive.
Mm.
Yeah. Those are the only foreigners that don't have to go through customs and borders. Now, and, nothing. That came out really fast. So
only foreigners to
talk about avoiding border control.
Oh my goodness. But you know what is actually unfair, Okay, Yeah. You were still saying yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. So you have the different in tax regimes, with jurisdictions, even though they are members of the of sometimes the same, or let me just say for the most part the same intergovernmental organizations like the UN, the UN and the AU, for example, throw SADC in there and basically every group.
Mm.
So one thing that you can also look at that from is that's one problem that's making it very difficult to implement like a universal tax regime, and also implementing that will basically bring up brings to mind the the plastic discussion, the plastic pollution discussion.
Yeah.
You know what's the most amazing thing that came out of that?
What?
They did not reach any.
I know.
Yeah, they didn't reach any conclusion of as to how they should help, solve the plastic pollution problem, and some NGOs at the end of the of this year's discussion, because they had one last year and it did not reach any positive conclusion. The one they had this year was pushed to sometimes in the future. They couldn't even agree on a specific date.
Mm.
Because companies that are highly dependent in terms of their economic economic revenue generation from from oil kept siding with We need a recycle. We have to go the way of recycling. But most NGOs and environmental activists were advocating for the strict manufacturing and the reduction in production of most plastics, especially the single use, yeah, like your plastic bags, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, some NGOs or some environmental activists at the recently held discussion gave a comment that went me go like, yeah, there's no way that can work. Some of them said, okay, now, how about in the next discussion, we just don't invite this oil, guys. Then we can just, so that we can quickly reach a conclusion of how to solve this plastic problem. I'm like, okay, they are producing the very
thing that you wish.
If you make laws without them, they are not going to sign or ratify them. That means.
And then they will fire people, close down their workshops, and then go somewhere else.
I know. If they are not there when you are making any type of agreement, they are not going to sign or ratify. That means you can't hold them accountable in any legal way. So, like,
because they can actually argue a scenario of, this was done without us, without our insights. Actually, no. Even if anything gets signed, they can literally highlight an irregular process.
Remember,
all their lawyers, the only thing their lawyers will point out is that this was irregular.
Trump and Putin met in Alaska.
Yeah.
You remember the whole fuss about Putin attending the BRICS summit in South Africa?
Yeah.
Western media went nuts. Why? It's because because South Africa is a signatory and they signed and ratified the ACC, the Roman Statute.
Yeah.
The US didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a game of technicalities.
Yeah.
They know that, even if South Africa starts pointing fingers at the US and saying, okay, well, when Putin was planning on coming to South Africa, you guys were criticizing us. Why can't you arrest him? They'll tell them, well, you were supposed to arrest him based on the papers you signed coming out of the International Criminal Court.
Because you were eager to sign things.
You signed everything. We didn't, so.
I know, you know, the world is just a funny place. I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry, guys. But let's also look at a scenario of specifically since I mentioned the irregularity component, because you and I know that any court will literally throw such a particular negotiation process out of the window, because they will say, listen, yeah, but you guys didn't consult with people. Did you consult with people when you were making a decision that would literally make their lives difficult? Because here's the onus, Helmut. Who sits with all the scientists?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing.
Not the NGOs.
No, they don't.
The NGOs sit
with... Who's funding all the research?
Not the NGOs.
Okay, I have one more. Who's funding most of the NGOs? Reality sucks.
It does. It's an ugly thing. So it's even worse than the revolving door politics.
Oh, it's worse.
It's ugly.
It's worse.
Now, when people sit and look at that particular picture, here in the Namibian, no, not Namibian context, but global context, because Namibia, obviously, I didn't look so deep into some to see where Namibia was in this negotiation, discussion so far, since we've only got like a minute to go before the next program. At the heart of all of this, Helmut, is how do countries actually reach particular consensus? I actually love Guterres's report, the report that was established in 2023. That is actually the reason why the member states were busy negotiating and having a meeting on, you know, the videos that you watched, is primarily because in the report, they literally outline some countries don't know how to treat multinational corporations, except for if you are part of the OECD. And the OECD is predominantly of Northern Hemisphere countries. Once again, African countries would not know how to deal with a multinational. You also outlined that. How do you deal with a big country, with a big company that makes so much money? You don't know how to adequately leverage. Remember the Toyota example I gave you?
Yeah. Oh, we're still dealing with the, we're still trying to figure out some Harry.
That too. Because here's the thing that Toyota does. Let's, for example, let's use, for example, the issue that the Americans had with seeing land cruisers in Yemen, busy shooting up the Abrams tanks that the Saudis were buying or were using. The downside was there, when they asked the Japanese guys, yo, what's happening? Why is there
so many? Are these guys acquiring this?
All these land cruiser buckies, what's going on here? And then the Japanese went like, you know what, guys? All we see is a massive order for 100 buckies coming out of Dubai or out of, what's the other country? What's the other? Out of Kuwait, and we're like, wow, business is booming, you know? And then they tell the guys, the factory in Australia, because that's just where the bucky is made most of the time, that Land Cruiser bucky, or it's made in somewhere in Southeast Asia. They just place the order and say, you guys need to make so many of this bucky.
Yeah.
But where does the actual money for the bucky go to? It doesn't go to the factory or, let's say, in Toyota, it's Indonesia. Or Indonesia or Toyota Australia, it goes to Toyota Japan. The money goes to Toyota Japan. The product is the one that comes from a different destination, country of origin.
Okay, but can't you just trace this money? Like, how is Boko Haram buying it?
You can trace the money.
In other words,
but the guy showed up with cash at the dealership like this. Now, how do you trace cash if the guy showed up with a briefcase?
Yeah, and
And remember,
and C4. I mean, all you just have to do is give the guy the.
And remember, what we don't know is that Muslim majority countries have a weird banking system that is outside of the Western banking system that we all know of.
Because they have different, financial laws. But HD is about matters.
Yeah.
2 minutes into the hour of six, we are going to take a quick short break before we
come back.
Before the Aluta continuous.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news.
You are now tuned into Financially Included, where money meets access. Proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia.
Good evening to all the Eagle FM listeners. You are now tuned into Financially Included, where money meets access. As usual, I am your host, Hendy, for the evening. I will be with you until 7 p.m. And on today's episode of Financially Included, we are talking about cyber security. How is cybersecurity related to financial inclusion? And in just a few moments, few brief moments, we will be joined by none other than Theo Hidulika from FNB, Client Support Specialist, Cybersecurity Specialist at FNB Namibia, who is going to dive into the topic with us, give us some insight, give us some expert analysis on how cybersecurity is related to financial inclusion, how the two work together, and how important it is for, various systems, various institutions, even us, the end user, to be secure when it comes to the various cyber threats. Don't forget, you can join the conversation at any time in the studio by dialing 083-288-401. That's 083-288-401. We will answer any questions you have, or you can ask Theo any questions once he joins us here in a few moments. Any cybersecurity questions you have, those of you that are regular Eagle FM listeners will remember Theo from our F&B segment that we used to do on Monday mornings. He used to educate us on you know, how to keep our bank accounts safe and so on. And on the other side of this, we'll be joined by our friend Theo.
You are now tuned into Financially Included, where money meets access. Proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?